I used to stay up late and tape the radio. I never missed the Demento show. Commercial free was my reward. If I timed it just right when I pressed record. Most folks thought Weird Al was best, but to me someone else stood out from the rest. They called him scary and today he'll be my guest. Sang about his kids and shop around zoo, things he shouldn't touch and super glue, sushi derrieres and his boss, he even had a song about taco sauce. His parodies were rarely surpassed, now you'll hear a few on this podcast. He's really funny with lots of talent. Let's talk to Gary Allen.
Gary Allen.
Welcome to the TK Jingles podcast for February 2nd, 2015. I am your host, Jerry Negrelli. This podcast features songs from the Tony Kornheiser Radio Show and TKJingles.com, and I am extremely excited that today my guest will be Scary Gary Allen, as referenced in the intro song there, who was an idol of mine when I was a teenager, doing parodies on the radio and the Dr. Demento show. Just a really hilarious guy. We're going to have a little chat a little bit later, play some of his tunes. Which you can't find anywhere. They're not available commercially, so hopefully you enjoy them here on this podcast, and you can go find them in the Demento archives and stuff. I was inspired by Tony this week. He was out in Arizona and basically didn't prepare for any show, so I figured I would do the same thing. So up front here before, I mean, we are just jam-packed today with content. We've got six new songs, all the Scary Gary stuff, a few new pieces of thing, you know, junk or whatever by me. But before we do that, I wanted just to tell a little story. I felt an affinity with Tony maybe on Tuesday or so. I don't know. He was telling a story about how whenever he eats his food, he doesn't like it to touch, and he always eats one thing at a time and kind of goes around the plate. And I thought, oh, wow, you know what? Tony's so neurotic, but that's what I do. That sounds like me, so I guess maybe I'm a little neurotic too. But then there, you know, he had another food story later in the week about his Subway sandwiches, and it could not have been more opposite. So I guess he had an incident where he really was looking forward to having a Subway sandwich all day, and the reason that he likes Subway, the way he described it, was that he's able to choose the things he likes because he wants a crunchy sandwich, and he can pick this, and he can pick that. And I'm sure next week we're just going to be inundated with sandwich songs. But for me, it's the total opposite. So I go to Subway, but it annoys me that I have to tell them what to put on the sandwich. When I go there, I say, well, what's in the picture? I don't care. I'm not a sandwich professional. I don't make sandwiches. Tell me what's good. Basically, everybody that I know thinks that that's a ridiculous response and that I should be excited about the ability to make my own sandwich. But honestly, it's fast food. I'm going there. I want a quick sandwich. I don't want to tell you to put a little bit of this, a little bit of that, extra sprinkle of this. It's ridiculous. All right. On to the music. So I mentioned we have the Scary Gary Allen interview later. We're going to play some of his tunes. First, we're going to play some songs that were on Tony's show this week or just were on the website this week. I wanted to start out with two songs by Judo Fuse, who is just killing it. The first one is a parody of Neil Diamond's Coming to America, or America. This was a song I thought about doing when I did the God Bless the USA, and the other one was just too perfectly cheesy, but I'm so glad that Judo Fuse did this because it's great. It's about Tony and being on the Americans and whether or not he's going to make the cut, and it's just really well done. And then I think one of the best produced and like kind of style parodies we've had in a while. What If Hippos Could Box, an Alice in Chains thing that just rocks. And then John Neisminger and I had an exchange earlier this week about this Goddess song. He wasn't sure if he should do it, whether or not, you know, they would go for it. And I really didn't think it would make the show because, you know, I did a song to Natalie Imbruglia's Torn. And I guess maybe if I did Billy Joel's song, it would have been better. But, you know, Nigel has said, Tony doesn't really like songs about, you know, the Goddess. And I did mention her stage name, which was a no-no. So that kind of killed it. But I was thrilled to hear John's song on Friday's show, and Courtney loved it, and she's been tweeting about it this week. And she's now the second TK regular to comment on TKJingles.com. David Aldridge holds the honor of being the one and only up until that moment that had actually left a post about a song he liked. Now Courtney weighed in just recently. So anyway, John Neisminger just doing great, and Tony had so many wonderful things to say about his performance and his voice and this and that, so that was a great moment. And then the last three here are all about the Javelinas, which I guess I missed that. It must have been an old guy radio. I've been listening sporadically this week, and I've been listening more to the ESPN podcast. So I missed all the Javelina talk. I heard a little bit about how he saw some big dogs or something, and I think they played it in the show open, or you know, some pig that looks like a dog. But the people have been going nuts with the Javelinas. So we have KJ, Mike in Avon, Connecticut, and Brad Weiss. And the last note I wanted to add before I play these songs is that KJ, I can never let Michelle hear this because she's going to kill me. She's her family's from Argentina, so she loves that musical and the fact that you've now covered Don't Cry For Me Argentina. I'm going to be in the doghouse if she ever hears this one, because this would have been on the list if she ever wants to help me out with something of songs that she would sing in a heartbeat. So let's keep it on the down low. So we'll hear these six songs, then we're going to play. I'm going to just segue into a couple of tunes from Scary Gary, play a couple of clips from the week, and then we'll get out of here. It's a jam-packed show.
Bar, my scene was in the bar. I had a line, it might be 80 yards. Be all I wanted to be was in a scene, episode 2 or 3. Had a dream for just a scene. You're my card from the Americans. Greg Garcia, help me please. And my card from the Americans. Close. Matthew and Carrie didn't care. Hey, was that my elbow there in the corner of the screen? In the corner of the screen. Close. But still so very far away. They even gave me a lot to say. Not sure the camera was on. Not sure the camera was on. Have you heard the news today? Am I cut from the Americans? Did my cameo not play? Am I cut from the Americans? I'm off screen, but I was there. Am I cut from the Americans? Tried to touch Kerry Russell's hair. Probably cut from the Americans. Am I cut from the Americans? Am I cut from the Americans? Am I cut from the Americans? And my card from the Americans. No way. No way. No way. No way. Oy vey. Yeah. can kill with her picks, but she spoons with her thighs. She can make Tony blush with her casual sighs. And she only picks one game, so that's what you see. I'll hide her from my child, but I hear she's a goddess to see. She will tell who she loves, between the Colts and the Eagles. With a giggle and laugh, she makes the orange man feeble. Tony takes what she gives him, as long as it's free. Yeah, her record's okay, but I hear she's a goddess on screen. Oh, she takes care of herself. She makes the picks when she wants, with reason sublime. Oh, and she always gives out the best Vegas spread, so we can make up our mind. She'll call into the show with a crappy connection, while all the men listen and hide their f***s. We don't hear all the best and the worst that she sees. And the most she will do is pick winners for you, but she's only the goddess to me.
Desert mountain, sporting my new shades, a walking ad for Sunglass Hut down here, strolling along the fairway, enjoying the sun, till I saw huge pigs running around pretending they could not see. Their tusks were as big as my head. They must have weighed as much as me. No tone, they just have a leanness. The truth is they will not hurt you. I beg your pardon. I'll take no chances. I got home safely, but where are my glasses?
One, two, one. Javelina, you weigh 300 pounds. You're just traipsing around on the golf course. Javelina, you can poke out my eyes, but Michael won't be surprised, cause he lives here, among other places. Playing golf in the morning sun with Michael Wilbon, we are having fun. I look down to mark my score. Here comes a 300-pound wild boar. Javelina, you weigh 300 pounds. You're just traipsing around on the golf course. Poke out my eyes, but Michael won't be surprised, cause he lives here when it's cold.
Cornizer's off to Phoenix, baby, to see the Hawks and the Pats. The ad event's all expired, so instead he'll be flying with a great big dose of Xanax. Pizza Bianco with the old gang, hope they make a fuss. Tony scarfs down the pasta, as long as his food don't touch. He'll be achy and tired when they drag him outside for golfing with Wilbon. He's out here on business, baby, but he might as well have fun. Oh, and Mike's got some brand new clubs. Javelina's right there on the fairway. Maybe blind, but those tusks sure do scare ya. Guess they're safer than New Jersey bears are. Javelina, so you better beware.
As always, that is just a small sampling of the amazing material available at tkjingles.com. So if you haven't been there recently, go check it out. Leave a comment. Let folks know what you like. Check out the mobile apps. Download them. Send me your feedback, podcast@tkjingles.com, or tweet at Jerry Negrelli. Join the conversation. So I wanted to play one song here real quick and then go into the interview with Gary. This is a song that when I first heard it on the show, it's not, you know, on its own, maybe that different than other standard parody songs. But for whatever reason, it really galvanized me, and I really got a kick out of it. It actually inspired me to realize how much I love Dion DiMucci and go buy some Dion albums because Gary's albums weren't available. But anyway, we're going to play Shop Around Sue and then interview with Gary. Then we're going to close it with Gary's one original song, which I parodied in the intro of this podcast, by Doggett Nolan Ryan. And then when I was going through Gary's back catalog, I saw a title for a song. I didn't listen to it because I didn't want to spoil it. A parody of I Don't Have the Heart to Tell You called I Don't Have the Hair I Used To. And I said, oh my God, Gary, can I steal that? That is a Tony Kornheiser jingle if ever there was one. So he was, you know, glad to let me do that. So that's going to play after this interview, and then we'll play the number one jingle of the week, and then we'll close it out.
Here's my story, it's sad but true, how all my debts just grew and grew, 'cause of a girl that I once knew. They call her Shop Around Sue.
Shop, shop, till you broke. Oh, shop, shop, till you broke. Oh, shop, shop, till you broke. Oh, shop.
Well, it was Sue I was trying to impress. I said, take my gold card, American Express. Go out, have fun, and blow a wad. But when the bill came in, I said, oh my God, you charge jewelry, furs, and fashion trends. A condo, a yacht, and a Mercedes Benz. She flew to the French Riviera first class. Shop Around Sue really burned my.
Shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop.
It didn't take her long to learn. I ran out of money to burn. Then she dumped me in a flash. And took Shop Around Sue.
Shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop. Shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop, shop, till you drop. Oh, shop.
I'm a big fan of yours, but for those of those that are listening today that aren't familiar with Scary Gary Allen and some of the work you've done, I wanted to know if maybe you could orient us a little bit about how you got started with music and comedy and kind of what you did and who you are.
That's a good question because it's so foggy that way back when. I've been a musician all my life, and a recording songwriter and so forth. And if I can recall how this all started, a very good friend of mine was a production director at Kiss FM, Don Elliott, here in Los Angeles. And he would ask me to come to his studio and just do some funny little things, and he'd leave the tape cartridge on Rick D's console. Rick D's was in the morning at the time, seeing if he'd play some of the stuff. And somehow from there, we started doing parodies. I can't quite remember how we crossed the line from just doing little bits to actually doing entire songs. But it kind of started organically, I think. And it was just so much fun, we just kept doing it.
What was the first thing that you guys did?
Yeah, the very first thing that was actually a full-blown parody was called Susucio, which was Phil Collins' Susudio, a parody of that. And that song, it was the summer of 1987. That song was so popular, got it played all around the country, and we're told that you couldn't buy the song. It was not released anywhere. We're told that it had more sales requests than whatever Madonna's song was out that summer. I mean, the thing just caught on like crazy. You know, that's when the sushi craze was just all starting, and it was And then also, we would get requests from stations all around the country. So we'd ship out cassette tapes to hundreds of radio stations, and we had several what you want to call radio hits. There, you know, we got airplay in major markets, and but just the songs just were not released. You couldn't buy them anywhere.
So did you ever release anything commercially?
Well, that's a real problem. I mean, we had record deal offers many times. The people come and said, yeah, you know, let's do an album. And we signed deals. It was always contingent on being able to get rights to material. And that became a big, big problem. Whenever you wanted, to obliterate somebody's song, you want to make sure that the songwriters, if they're still alive, or their estate, or their publisher, whoever is going to sign off on it. And if a song gets older and older, the whoever owns it or who controls rights to it gets more and more cloudy, because publishing catalogs are sold from one publisher to another. It became an impossible task. We tried very, very hard to get clearance on material, and in doing so, we even got cease and desist letters saying, do not release the song. You know, they in thinking that making something funny out of it might reduce its value. You know, today I think there's so much parody that's so common now today, I don't think we would have encountered that. But back then it was really tough. And that's why if you look at Weird Al Yankovic's albums, only a couple of them are parodies. The rest are original songs. He had the same problems that we did. We would bump into him with publishers. And it was really a shame, because a lot of people wanted the material, but we just couldn't really profit from it.
Yeah, you know, I was a teenager back in the 90s when a lot of your stuff was really proliferating, and I drove the local record shop guys nuts, because on a weekly basis I would go in there asking if there was anything available yet. And without, they would always do the catalogs. They'd say, oh, no, there's nothing in here. Don't know that name.
Yep, that happened all over the country, and it was frustrating, because we would bet one day, hey, where can I buy it? It's, you can't, record it off the radio. That's the best we could do. And the only one thing that ever got released was an original parody. I should say public domain parody of Auld Lang Syne. It's called New Year's Resolutions, and it was on Dr. Demento's Holidays in Dementia album. And I still get royalty checks from that. I mean, they're still selling that album years and years later. It's crazy. Most of the stuff we did was pop, current pop, and then we actually were approached by a publisher who said, hey, we've got a catalog of these great oldies, and it'd be easier if you just use stuff out of our catalog. So I started doing a lot of oldies parodies, and that's when the ABC Satellite Music Network picked up everything, because they were in oldies format. And it's still gotten to too many steps to try to get the material cleared. But what made it very difficult for us, or challenging, or more involved in those days, karaoke really hadn't hit yet, or it was just starting to hit. So, you know, today a lot of people do parodies. They just get a karaoke track and, you know, write funny material and lyrics and sing to it. Or they use a vocal eliminator and, try to suppress the vocal on the original record. We actually recreated every record from scratch on a 4-track recorder. I played every instrument. We built the song from scratch. So if we were able to get clearance, we wouldn't have to then go ahead and get clearance on someone else's master. So we owned all of the physical tracks, but it still wasn't enough. It still was not enough to get people to sign off on it. Sometimes we would be doing on a Sunday, and Dr. Demento's show originated here in Los Angeles on KLSX. I think it started like at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. We would actually do a parody, finish it up around 7, drive it out to him that night, and we play it that night on the air. It was, we just kind of became a factory of doing parodies for a while. We couldn't obviously keep up that pace, but.
What was your process like? I know that in terms of coming up with ideas and writing them, I mean, you described how you played every instrument, but how did you come up with that material?
Well, it depended on whether what we were doing was trying to do something off of a current hit or going against, an oldies catalog. The first thing we always looked for was a title that could be twisted into, something funny. One of my favorites it's a song, Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed. The title was Taco Sauce on the Mild Side. And, so I always look for things that you can turn a title into a tongue twister of some kind, and then take it from there and see if you could build, a funny story around it.
Meatballs, the fire Mexican restaurant.
Well, now, I can't eat anything hot, so I'm not really sure what I want.
Start with chips and salsa. It's really good.
Well, is it real hot? I don't know if I should. See, I like my taco sauce on the mild side.
Oh, go on. Go for the hot chili peppers. They're suicide.
Oh, no. I like my taco sauce on the mild side, okay?
Be a macho man. Give your taste buds a thrill.
I wouldn't say there was it was scientific enough by any means. It was just if something hit you, you say, hey, that's funny. You know, maybe we can take this song, look at it upside down, and you know, change the lyrics around. And half the fun also was actually recording the tracks. It was a lot of fun to go in and you know, do track by track to recreate the songs. That was from a musician standpoint. That was a lot of fun, too.
Do you still perform now?
I am still a musician. I mean, I play in classic rock bands because it's just so much fun. I've been doing that forever. And I live in Ventura County now. Downtown Ventura is a big, big music mecca here in Southern California. I mean, it's everywhere else in Los Angeles. It's pretty much dead. But downtown Ventura has gone through a metamorphosis over the past 10 years, and it's got lots of clubs and restaurants and live music everywhere. So it's a lot of fun. I still play. Don't really make any money out of it. You know, covers gas. Well, I can walk to these places now, but it's fun. You know, it's really more like a social club, these bands. You know, the musicians and singers, we're all friends. We like to go out and sing and play, and it's like partying.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, once it's in your blood, it's in your blood, you know.
So you haven't been doing the parody thing for a while, though. Do you ever get the itch to do that again?
No. Only because now it's too easy to. I mean, there's too many people doing it. It was fun when you could do something and people say, "Well, how did you do that?" But now with karaoke tracks everywhere, you can buy it for 99 cents. It's not, to me, it's not like a challenge anymore. You know, I still sometimes think of funny lyrics, but I don't actually go ahead and produce. I'm doing some other, you know, original production. Again, nothing that's career oriented. I'm not trying to make my living at music. So, you know, we all know how easy that is to do. But I still record all the time, still write all the time, but it's not even parodies.
So I was looking at the Demento archive, and you know, they have every show playlist from the last, I don't know, since the beginning of time. And it looked like for 3 or 4 years, you had a lot of stuff that was really focused. It sounds like that's the time we're describing here. Just curious, if you have any other favorite memories from that time? I mean, you mentioned chatting with Weird Al, or you know, going to the studio to drop off your tapes. Anything else about that people might find interesting?
We really got wrapped up in the process. It became like just a fun weekly challenge of, God, can I get something done by this Sunday and get it to Dr. Mendoza by Sunday. You know, it became a kind of an obsession to do it. But it was a fun obsession because it was a challenge. You know, and then you do a song, it wasn't very good, or you do it, you thought it was great, drop it off to Dr. at KLSX or Dr. Demento, and he doesn't play it. And you go, damn, we thought that was a good one. But, you know, you can't. That was really fun, though. They could do that. Some of our songs, I forgot what he called it, the not his top 10, you know, the top whatever.
The Funny Five?
We had a couple of songs. Yes, the Funny, yeah. We had a few songs that were in that pretty consistently. One was called Who Don't Touch That. That one was the granddaddy. That was another bona fide radio hit nationally. I mean, that got airplay everywhere.
Don't touch that! Ooh, don't touch that! You don't know where it's been. Don't touch wet paint. Don't touch that dial. A rotten egg. Yeah, don't touch that. Never touch yellow snow. Not even with a 10-foot pole. Never touch hairy food or gum that's chewed. Yeah, don't touch that.
When you find lumps in your pudding pops, don't touch them, they're not cool.
Don't stick your finger in the ear of a fat chick at school.
Gosh, never touch anything that's dragged in by the cat.
Crazy Granny, go forget you. Don't touch that.
Hey man, don't touch my lady.
You can looky, but no touchy.
Ooh, don't touch me there.
Don't touch milk if it's crunchy.
Never sit on a wet seat.
Don't touch an ugly woman in heat.
Hold on, get aside, get away from my weed wagon. Don't touch that.
Never touch a tissue.
Don't touch the slurpy machine.
Hey, I wouldn't touch that pit bull that's foaming at the mouth.
Know what I mean?
Never touch the wart on Aunt Martha's chin. Never touch what's on you when you sneeze in the wind.
Achoo!
Good evening. Don't touch the blood from a vampire man.
Well, I wouldn't touch it if I could remember what it was for.
Last guy to touch this, he ain't around no more.
Oh, yes, you haven't had tequila until you get the worm.
And don't think a worm is kosher. It's schmutz. Don't touch that.
It's amazing just how similar the experience that you had there is to this this thing that we're doing now. I mean, I can't listen to a song in the car without trying to think of, oh, is this appropriate for a parody? Is there some way I could twist this into something else? I mean, it just, a lot of the music that we do is for a sports radio station,
right.
And the sports anchors talked about how they can't really enjoy sports the same way anymore because they do it all the time,
yep.
And it's kind of become that way with these parody songs. Every single thing is a stupid idea. I mean, as you said, it's just an obsession.
Well, in music in general, I drive my life crazy because as I'm listening to songs, I mentally break down every track in my head. And I say, do you notice how that bass is? What are you talking about? No, the bass sounds this or hear that. That's not a number. And she thinks I'm crazy, but you know, you break every song down mentally, instrument by instrument. And that's, it kind of takes some of the fun out of listening to stuff because you become a critic of every nuance in the song. But, you know, again, it's something that if your brain is wired that way, you just really can't stop it.
I totally can relate to that. On the It's Just My Kids track, is that actually your kid?
Yes. My two daughters, the crying baby was my youngest who is getting married in August. She's no longer a little baby. And then my older daughter, who now is I'll brag. She's a Harvard educated entertainment attorney. How's that? She's been very accomplished.
Oh, wow.
And so she was eight years old at the time. And when I came across these tracks to get to you, because I hadn't, when I moved, all the material was packed away, and I really wasn't quite sure where it was. I came across It's Just My Kids, another song called Don't Wake the Baby, which also features my kids in it. And I emailed them to them last night, and they just got a kick out of it. You know, they hadn't thought about the songs in a long time, and just hearing them now when they were little kids, it was pretty funny. They got a kick out of it.
Well, when I was a teenager, when those came out, I thought they were amusing. But now I've got two daughters myself, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I almost drove off the road today listening to that song.
I one line where she says, "Hey, Dad, the IRS called." Oh, hey, Dad, you're going to love it. The IRS just called, and I told them to shove it.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah.
Kids, they're a pain in the neck.
It's our job to make our dad a nervous wreck.
Oh, it's just my kids. They drive me batty.
It's fun to watch the baby throw her food at daddy.
It's bewildering. Why did I have offspring? It's just my kids. It's just my kids.
Shoot,
shoot, shoot.
I mean, with everything on the internet, it's everyone's trying to monetize, everything. And you just can't. There's just people. There's too much material available.
Right.
And people's attention spans are now, 3 second attention spans, instant gratification, and it's challenging. Not just for guys like us who make parodies, but for music artists, for television producers, for anybody that creates any kind of content. Finding an audience now is not the way it used. Not like it used to be.
Yeah. No.
Look, where's radio today? Look at radio today. Who listens to the radio?
I wanted to transition here quickly just to give you a chance to talk about some of the stuff you're doing today. So obviously this parody music was a long time ago, but I saw through your contact info right now that you're running something called First Run TV.
Yeah, I was with Disney for the past 23 years. I was I was a vice president of new media technology and involved in a lot of online initiatives. And
were you doing all that parody music while you were at Disney?
Part of the time, yeah. I think of one of the songs Disney ended up using as a promo. I forgot all about that. I can't remember what song it was. But so I started realizing almost 15 years ago that when the web first hit the internet, and the first time I saw Netscape Navigator, and I go, what the heck is this? And my mind started racing forward, and I started realizing, at some point in the future, entertainment will be distributed on this thing called the internet. And lo and behold, of course, it is. So I left Disney after 23 years to start First Run TV, which is an online TV network with 10 channels of all original content from web producers. So it's kind of a showcase for people who produce web content, web series. It's not a video sharing site. It's not like YouTube. Nobody can upload videos. The material is kind of hand picked, and it's a showcase for people who do quality content. And
is it like real time, like TV, or do you kind of pick and choose like on demand what you want to watch?
It's programmed, so the material's there for a certain amount of time. It's not like it's real-time programmed. It's, material's added every week. And some of the, if something's episodic, then, each week there's a new episode. In some cases, many older episodes will stay online, or if it's timely, they'll drop off. It varies by type of program, what it covers, how timely it is, and so forth. But it covers pretty wide gamut of comedy, science fiction, drama, talk, sports, technology, travel. It's very interesting to see what people are doing now because they can. I mean, now with a high definition camera, with some lighting and a little bit of know-how, you can actually create a decent looking production and you can edit it on your desktop. Again, try to do that 10 years ago. So people are now creating content because they can. Instead of just writing a script and putting it on a shelf, hoping somebody will buy it, they're writing a script and they're making it. And that's what's, very liberating for creative people. And it's really fun to see how good some of the stuff is. A lot of it's bad, but some of it's really, really good. Some of it's very filmic, shot, like a film. Because they'll look to it, and it's when it's lit nice, when it's the audio is done properly, It's really amazing to see what's coming out of not a studio, but out of somebody's garage or bedroom or something. And, as we're seeing now, TV is moving to the internet. Netflix is now, slowly becoming the dominant television network. Everyone now is trying to race to get online and figure out how that's going to work. However, what is NBC, ABC, and CBS? What are they going to be 5 years from now? Why are you going to need a network? You're not. Because their programming will come over the same wire into your living room that my programming will or your programming will. So I'm guessing they become more like studios and marketing entities, not so much a quote-unquote network, because content will all be a la carte when you want to watch it. There won't be like a network primetime schedule. You won't need that anymore. So it's, I would say we're one of the most historic crossroads in the history of broadcasting right now.
Well, I think the announcement by HBO that they were finally going to offer an a la carte option free of cable, the Sling TV announcement in the past few weeks. Yeah, it's...
They don't have a choice because their lunch will be eaten by everyone else who does do that. So, you know, everyone's, ABC is not doing it. They're all saying, how do we do this and how do we preserve our current model? Well, you can't preserve the current model. Forget that. It's going away. You have to now, everyone's going to now try to figure out how to get a presence online. Look what happened to the music industry. What is a record label now? What, I mean, who cares about Warner? I mean, artists record their material and release it on their own. That is the fate of the traditional network. It will not be necessary anymore. There will not be gatekeepers. You don't need to have a license to run a TV station. You put it on the web. It's the great equalizer. And like I said, the music industry, in my view, is the model of what will happen to television. It's happened to publishing, too.
Well, the music industry still controls the, I mean, in terms of promotion and what gets listened to and what gets pushed, there's still a significant influence there, right?
Well, yeah, but you know something interesting? Disney has a record label, Hollywood Records, and, you know, they have gotten a little wise in that they don't go out and hire and sign bands. They use the Disney Channel as a feeder for Hollywood Records. You know, they have their stars on shows on the Disney Channel, who happen to also be singing artists. But as it turns out, these days, they don't make their money selling records. They may make some of it in publishing, but what they really have become, they've gotten into the concert promotion business. You know, they would see, like, you know, these people they would sign. They wouldn't sell a lot of records, but they, you know, they go tour, and the concert promotion companies would make all the money and selling all the merchandise. Well, they wise up and said, you know what? We're going to own it all. So Disney, Hollywood Records is in the concert promotion business. They're in the merchandising business. So they pretty much control the whole, all the channels related to the artists. And again, the least of which is selling records. Yeah, they sell them, but it's not like what it used to be when you quote unquote, you know, had a gold record. The amount of activity it took to get a gold record was something all the time. Now, you know, people don't buy albums anymore. You know, they buy songs, and so it's for a dollar a piece. That is not really, it's not profitable for the big companies anymore. I don't know what's going to happen to the record companies. I know they it's not, you can't, they don't sign bands anymore. There are no A&R artists that go listen to bands and, you know, sign artists based upon their performing and writing ability. Everything is manufactured now. All manufactured in the studio with drum loops, grooves, and auto-tune devices. You know, it's not really music like... I sound like my dad when he told me, oh, it's not like our music. But it's not. It's not.
The curmudgeon's perspective.
Yeah.
Well, with First Run TV, how can you get there right now? Through Roku, Apple TV, all those things?
It's on the web, obviously. There's an Android app. There's an iPhone app. There are also web versions of it, so you don't really need the app. It looks exactly the same with or without an app. It's a free channel on Roku.
All right, Gary. Well, it's been great talking with you. I really appreciate you taking the time. I think I got plenty of stuff here.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Jerry.
I had a great collection of baseball cards, but they're now in the garbage in my backyard. What took me 10 years to collect, in just 10 minutes were totally wrecked. My baseball cards came to an end in a couple of gulps by a man's best friend. My darn dog, that stupid Bow Wow, turned my baseball cards into puppy chow. I left the doggy door open last night. My stupid dog came in for a bite. I call him Jaws because he eats everything in sight. He ate my Franco, my Feller, my rookie Ozzie Smith, my 3D hologram card of Fred McGriff, Fingers Fox, Fazio, and Old Ty Cobb, Louis Aparicio, the Gibson's Kirk and Bob. Bart, Mason, Mantle, and even Norm Cash are now out back in a pile of trash. What's worse all, I'm really dying. My dog ate Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, a rare 68 rookie and artifact, and he turned it into a midnight snack. I asked, how can there be a god when my baseball cards are now a dog spit wad?
There went my investment every last dime when my canine decided to die.
What makes me want on a screen. He had complete sets on almost every team. I had tops and flares, all classics, but they're now somewhere in my dog's gut. That furry four-legged bottomless pit chewed my baseball cards into kibbles and fits. What he didn't eat is covered with puppy spit. He ate Darling Dibbles, DiMaggio's, Dom and Joe, Roberts, Raider, Riddick, Rose, and Canseco. Bigger Boss, Bobby Brown, and Big John Crook. A Bob Wells rookie worth $1,000. Mark and Law, Lafayette, Griffey's dad and son, and Maris hitting his 61st home run. But the worst of all, what's got me crying, my dog ate Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan.
I had a Bobby Tolan card with his picture upside down, Ebbets Field Polo Grounds, and the old St. Louis Browns, Valenzuela Valentine, and Andy Van Slyke, Barbara Coleman, and Rizzuto with Vinny and the mic. Williams drew the musical, all favorites of the fans, Fender carving David Green, and other also-rans. But the biggest blow of all, the one that's got me sighing, my dog ate Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan.
He ate Gilliam, Williams, Billy, and Ted. Clemens, Klein, and Clark, both Will and Fred. Steve Garvey, Harvey Keene, and Pee-wee Reese's, now chewed up in little pieces. Robertson, Wilbur, Jackie Brooks, and Frank. Home run, Baker, and Ernie Banks. Catfish Hunter, Dizzy Dean, and Jesse Hayes. He ate the whole darn baseball Hall of Fame. Killebrew, Powell, Luga, Prices, Lou Gehrig, Koufax, Steve Sachs, the classic Yogi Berra, Bill Terry, Gaylor Perry, and Thurl Strawberry, Max Carey, Lazarian.
People are staring. Is it something I'm wearing? Oh, wait. It's probably just because I'm bald. But Wilbon looks dashing. He's a paragon of fashion. Why do I look like a hot dog with a beard and shades? I don't have the hair I used to. Mother Nature is really cruel. I don't have the hair I want to, but at least I'm still richer than you. Forget the rules, Bill said to Tommy. Just ignore them like I ignore integrity. Follow me and you'll win another MVP. There must be 50 ways to cheat like Brady. Tom said, do I really need to do any of that? Just leave me to my Uggs and my poofy hat. But then again, I really do like my balls flat. I guess there's 50 ways to cheat like Brady. 50 ways to cheat like Brady. Just spy on the Jets, Jeff. Wink at the ref, Jeff. Deflate the ball, Paul. It's so easy. Make crazy formations up. Give a little tuck, Chuck. Get two ladies knocked up at the same time.
All right, kids, that has been the TK Jingles podcast for February 2nd, 2015. This has been one of my most favorite episodes to record. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Please send me your feedback, podcast@tkjingles.com, tweet at Jerry Negrelli. We'll be back here in this segment next week with a fun mailbag. I'd love to hear from you. I hope you're enjoying this. We're coming up on episode number 50. I probably should do something special, but I don't know. Maybe I'll just wing it again. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this. Thank you so much to Scary Gary Allen for joining me today. I'll be back here next week.
Make me dessert. I'm hungry and I want some cake or some pie. I'll sit on my ass while you cut me a slice. Offer me the biggest piece, but good God, what a great wife. Make me dessert. I'm hungry and I want some cake or some pie. I'll sit on my ass while you cut me a slice. Offer me the biggest piece, but good God, what a great wife.
Yeah, you know,
know my family, that's one of the things they ask me all the time is, what is the end game with this hobby? There's no end game. It's just a lot of fun.
The end game is at the end of the day, you say, that was fun. What's the next one? You know, so we would just crank them out.